And another one of my great hidden favorites from the 1920s, one of the people that the folk revival, blues revival, etc. revival people consistently overlooked or dismissed as a vaudevillian was Papa Charlie Jackson, who was came along in the wake of Wendell Hall and Ain't Gonna Rain No More, and with just with the little voice and the simple little instrument to play a very popular tune. Charlie Jackson came along with a six-string banjo the following year and did a song called Salty Dog Blues that is still reverberating nearly a century later. And I'm very anxious to hear Carrie Moskowitz tell us about it.
Really exciting event to be able to talk to an audience like this about this project. It's also exciting because so often at conferences when people submit proposals about what they're going to be talking about and work in progress and how that timing lines up to the actual time to give the talk, I left here yesterday at 11 because I had to go back over to the Rubber Room Studio to finish mixing and mastering this project, which I actually finished at 5:30 last night. So how's that for timing? Sorry, it's logged me out. Here we go. So last June, almost a year ago today, I was at the Mount Airy Fiddlers Convention. Any of you been there? Yep. Jamming up on the hill with some folks on Saturday night, having a really great session. And a friend of mine, Jen Maurer, a bass player, pianist, a fabulous singer, had come in for, she had, I think, 36 hours to come from Ohio to Mount Airy. And we were playing. Dom Flemons came by, was in town, and we had a great jam, about, I don't know, six or seven of us. And among the different tunes we played were a couple of Papa Charlie Jackson tunes. The next morning, I ended up jamming with Dom, here it comes now, for probably about an hour. We sat down, and I don't remember which of us, talking about the jam last night, played a Papa Charlie Jackson tune first. And I don't know if I did, and then Dom said, "Oh, do you know this one?" That's a great tune. I don't play that one. Do you know this one? Oh, I never did that one. And I think for probably an hour, we traded off Papa Charlie Jackson tunes. It may be the only place that's actually ever happened, I'm guessing, where people sat down and played an hour's worth of solid Papa Charlie tunes. Later that day, I bumped into Domina just thinking about all this wonderful music. And when I play these songs with other people, and a lot of Papa Charlie songs I've been performing in a band I play with, audience members seem to love them. Other musicians seem to love them. There's just a lot of really, really great tunes. Bumped into Dom and said, "We ought to do some kind of tribute project. People need to know this music." And so that's basically where the seed for this originated. It turns out that there are a few Papa Charlie Jackson fans scattered around the country, and I've, along the way in the last year, bumped into a lot of them who have really helped take this project from this idea to what it's become, which is really exciting. I was able to get, I think, a total of 10 different people to contribute both vocals and instrumental performances on a CD that's going to be released in Fall Goes Well, about 2 months, on Document Records, as a two-disc set. So we did basically newly recorded interpretations of 15 Papa Charlie Jackson songs, not all of which were his original songs. And Gary at Document is actually next week going to be remastering those 15 tunes and to come out as a two-disc set. The idea of this project was really to get more people to appreciate, as was mentioned, the fact that there's a wonderful songster that is just underappreciated. Really great songs, great performances. Papa Charlie Jackson was a really interesting and talented player and a great deliverer of songs. So I'm really excited that this project is actually coming to fruition here very soon. So like a lot of the people, and it's interesting the comments that were just made about Doc Watson's background. I mean, really we can think about him as being a songster as well, that Jackson played a mixture of kind of vaudeville songs, some stuff probably from Tin Pan Alley, blues songs, some songs that were written by others reinterpreted by him, some songs that he most clearly penned himself. According to his draft card, which was uncovered by guy down in Alabama, Randy Meadows. He was working the docks of Gulfport, Mississippi in 1917. Banjo player for Louis Armstrong's Hot Five, Johnny St. Cyr, mentions Jackson as a list of people who were playing around New Orleans when he was there. And actually, that's the only mention I've been able to find of him actually doing anything prior to Chicago. And then he moved up to Chicago and was playing on the streets and discovered by Mayo Williams, who himself is an interesting guy, a football player, African-American college graduate, who really didn't know much about music or the music business and was given the job of kind of running Paramount's race records, not, as it turns out, on a salary, but basically on a percentage basis, which I think is kind of interesting fact that I'll get to in a second. Gary at Document has in his possession a letter that Mayo Williams wrote. I'm just going to share you a paragraph from that. As for Papa Charlie Jackson, I discovered him right here in Chicago on the west side around Maxwell Street. His original home, however, was in New Orleans, the home of jazz. I made a trip down there during the Mardi Gras time to book him in the Palace Theater for a week. This was at the height of his popularity and at a time when his Shake That Thing was the hottest thing on records. In fact, Shake That Thing was the theme song adopted by many of the Mardi Gras revelers as it expressed the spirit of the occasion. Papa Charlie thrived on salty songs and became one of the most popular recording artists of the era. I would say that he helped put the roar in the Roaring Twenties. Now, clearly, Mayo Williams is not an unbiased source here, right? He wants, as a, at least a point of record, to amplify, if anything, Charlie's background and importance. But I think it is a good place to start in thinking about the importance of Papa Charlie Jackson in American music. There's not been much written about Jackson, although I think there's probably a lot of historical digging still to be done. But just to give you a sense of his importance in the musical world, I'm just going to read you a few quotations from some different sources here. So first, Elijah Wald, his Grove Music Online Blues, so this is his section on blues, says, in 1924, a New Orleans-born six-string banjo player named Papa Charlie Jackson became the first male singer successfully to challenge the recording monopoly of the Blues Queens. Paul Oliver, who many of you I'm sure know, wrote in his Blues in the 1920s first recordings, quote, many of these so-called classic blues singers came from the South or from border states and had heard rural singers whose blues they borrowed. With Papa Charlie Jackson's Papa's Lottie Lottie Blues, recorded with banjo accompaniment in 1924, the recording industry began to make known the songs of the country tradition. Paul Finkelman's Encyclopedia of African-American History wrote, quote, at the turn of the century, black American music was bristling with creative energy, and by the 1920s, seminal blues and jazz recordings were made by the likes of, get this list, Papa Charlie Jackson, Blind Lemon Jefferson, Ma Rainey, King Oliver, Jelly Roll Morton, and Louis Armstrong. That's pretty good company there. More recently, in issue of Popular Music in Honor of Paul Oliver, this is from 2007, says, the first significant blues recordings by a black male singer came out in 1924 from the minstrel show singer Papa Charlie Jackson. So clearly this is someone who deserves, for historical reasons, to be known and acknowledged. I'm hoping that you'll leave today, if you're not already a fan, appreciating him not as a historical figure, but for someone who made some really great music. So why don't many people know his music? Well, I'm going to speculate here that one of the reasons is Paramount was making some pretty crappy recordings. Just the quality of the music itself, people like us can stand to listen to these recordings, but not many other people. A lot of his stuff is humorous, has the kind of vaudevillian sensibilities that people were looking for when they went digging back in the kind of folk revival. And it may be that the fact that so much of his material is more lighthearted party music rather than capturing the kind of Negro experience that I think a lot of folks were looking for, and they're looking for blues music, might have had something to do with it. Also the fact that he wasn't a guitar player. He played this banjo, six-string banjo guitar, and it's a quirky instrument. So I think altogether, those may at least be some of the reasons why he's certainly not as well known as he ought to. So, coming back to this disc, the idea here was not to do any kind of historical recreations. That's not what I'm into as a player. But to find people who were passionate about this music, who could do some new interpretations capturing the sensibilities of these songs to make them accessible and enjoyable to modern audiences, and then also, hopefully, as a gateway to make it easier for people to go back and listen to those original recordings, right? It's a lot easier to listen to noisy recordings once you know the music or into the music than starting out from scratch. So those of us on the recording, the three principal people, myself, Adam Tanner, who's a really wonderful multi-instrumentalist and singer based out of Asheville, North Carolina, and Jen Maurer from Ohio. A couple of people guest and do some guest vocals and playing on there, Dom Flemons and Jaron Paxton, and then a variety of other people. Adam's going to be here to play with us Saturday night. Also will be Joe DeJournette. I know some of you know Joe, a great bass player. Chris Frank from the Red Clay Ramblers plays on a few tunes. Sam Rettman, a harmonica player from Ohio. And then some of the folks that I play with locally here, Ed Witkin, Rita Vickeles, and Berkeley Grimble. And Berkeley will be here playing clarinet and bass clarinet on Saturday as well. So to get to the music, I'm going to start by playing you two pieces of tracks. I'm going to play an excerpt of the originals and then an excerpt of our recently minted versions. Papa Charlie's first session in 1924 had two sides, Papa's Lottie Lottie Blues and Airy Man Blues, and it's a very interesting pair of choices to start with. So what we know about the context is that Mayo Williams had been hired pretty recently. He's looking for people to record. He's not a musician, but supposedly attracted to Jackson, according to an interview with him, because of the danceable nature of his music and his skill on the banjo. Stephen Kalt in his Paramount Anatomy of a Race label was written in 78 Quarterly, says this: although Jackson was a small-voiced baritone with only a street corner reputation, Williams felt that his uniqueness would commend him to record buyers. An avid tap dancer, he was particularly taken by Jackson's beat. Quote, I could just see myself dancing to Papa Charlie, but not to those other artists. He said, if you follow Papa Charlie, you find he had good rhythm. You could dance by nearly every song Papa Charlie made. He was a one-man band. Jackson, according to Kalt, was the first black recording artist to perform and record dance music, which most city musicians and street singers did not play. Williams also said, quote, I was looking for something like that, something different. He was a hell of a banjo player. Now, Jackson was clearly an experienced player, had been playing on the street, had been playing in New Orleans. He surely had a repertoire. And the fact that the first thing he cut was this song called Papa's Lottie Lottie Blues is interesting because it's almost a slow-motion song. It's delivered very slowly. It has very few lyrics. A lot of it is baby, baby, baby. And I wonder if... I'll pass on that. But it's among his tunes, certainly not one of his danceable ones, nor does it show off his quite able facility on the banjo. It's a simple 8-bar blues progression, although maybe a little atypical, then it starts on a 4-chord. And just a little bit about the lyrics. So the very first line that Papa Charlie Jackson ever recorded was, I love my baby and my baby do love me. And then, Lottie Laud, Lottie Laud, Lottie Laud, which is obviously a despondent thing, right? So he loves his baby loves him, and that's a sad situation. And then the song goes on basically to talk about all the other women that he's with. So obviously, you know, the song about I'm in love with my woman, there's other women, that's obviously not a new story there. So I'm going to play you just a little bit of that here, and we'll see if our volume's okay. And so what you're going to hear now is about a minute of his and then a minute of our new version.
I love my baby and my baby do love me. Lord, 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 Lord. Get away from my soul. Don't go. what you're going to do.
Glad I got Jen to sing that song. She does it so well. Dom's playing six-string banjo on that, Adam Tanner fiddle, and Chris Frank tuba. So that was the first tune that Papa Charlie recorded. The second song is almost as different as could be. This one has lots of words, very idiosyncratic language, and the words come out kind of fast and furiously. It also is a kind of interesting tune harmonically. It has a lot of time where it's just, for those of you who are in the music theory thing, sitting on the one chord, and then has a kind of 2-5-1-2-5, and then back one for the verse, and then a very typical bridge, which is a 3-6-2-5-1. Lots of songs in the era use that. First time he plays it, he plays that progression and then plays it again back to back, which is unusual. And then at the end of the tune, he actually plays it, I think, four times in a row as his outro, which is really strange, but works brilliantly, I think. So here's his version of this and then ours. Berkeley Grimble playing that great bass clarinet, and you'll get to hear that Saturday if you're still around. So just briefly a little bit on Papa Charlie's influence on kind of on others, recording industry and other performers. Paul Oliver, from his wonderful book Barrel House Blues, Location, Recording, and Early Tradition of the Blues, says this: companies like Columbia and Black Swan sought to cash in on the new market by recording other female vaudeville artists singing blues. They drew heavily on singers from Harlem and Chicago's South Side. Up to this point, there'd been little incentive to look farther afield for new artists, but it was increasingly evident that male artists were largely being overlooked. An exception occurred when the banjo-playing clog dancer, I don't know where that particular piece of information came from, but it's interesting, from New Orleans, Papa Charlie Jackson, who had been on vaudeville shows, was recorded by Paramount. Jackson's Papa's Lottie Lottie Blues and Area Man Blues were issued in Paramount in 24. The success of Charlie Jackson's blues titles and the knowledge that he came from Louisiana encouraged other record companies to seek male talent beyond Chicago and New York. And then according to Lonnie Johnson, the OK Company held a blues singing contest in St. Louis just after this, with the winner getting a recording contract, and Johnson won first place every week for 18 weeks in 1925. So that was spurred from Jackson's success. Jackson plays almost all of his recorded material sung solo, accompanied by his banjo guitar. He records a few songs on flat top. He accompanies some other artists. He was also kind of a studio guy for Paramount at the time. And people like Ma Rainey, Lucille Bogan, Ida Cox, he accompanies, sings or talks during some of their performances. And he also recorded a couple of tunes with Freddie Keppard's Jazz Cardinals in 1926. He did a second version of Salty Dog Blues with them. Johnny St. Cyr says, quote, that Keppard was the Louis Armstrong of his day, that he set a precedent for hot trumpet players. So the fact that, again, that Jackson's recording with kind of the hot jazz guy of his day said something about it. And those tunes are very different than his others, but we did a couple of songs in that spirit, not the same ones that he did. One of them is one of my favorite Papa Charlie tunes, Mama Don't You Think I Know, which is, I think, also got some of his funniest lyrics. I'm going to play here for you again about a minute of his version and a minute of ours.
Got a nod to your mama down in Tennessee. She's short and squat, she's all right with me. Don't you think I know? Mama, don't you think I know? Need mama, what you gonna cook tonight? Whatever you cook, just cook it right. Don't you think I know? Mama, don't you think I know?
So I know we're coming up on lunch hour here. I'll just make a couple of quick comments, and then hopefully there'll be a little time for folks to talk to each other about Papa Charlie and maybe to me and tell me things that I don't know. There's, of the material that I've been able to find kind of historiographically, something that you can put your fingers on and say, okay, well, at least we know what the source of this information is, almost all of it seems to come from either interviews with Mayo Williams or from Big Bill Brunzi, who did at least one, and I'm hoping, I think, another interview with Studs Terkel in the 50s. And I want to thank Allison Sheen from the Studs Terkel Radio Archive. You'll be hopefully hearing from her soon, who has just been incredibly generous with her time and helping me get my hands on some of that stuff. So this is what Brunzi says in an article that he... an autobiography that he collaborated on, I guess, for the Jazz Record Journal was called Baby, I Done Got Wise. He says, I didn't play any for a few years, he was originally a fiddler, until I met Charlie Jackson in 1924. He found out I could play a fiddle and he had me come around. John Thomas, Theodore Edwards, and Charlie were all playing on the West Side. Charlie first got me started in guitar at that time, showed me how to make chords, and then I played around a little with John Thomas. Charlie was a well-known recording artist at that time, and he got me to go to Mayo Williams, who was working for Paramount then. Another interesting connection was with Sam and Kirk McGee. The McGee brothers accompanied Uncle Dave Macon on the Grand Old Opry. They were kind of the, I don't know, if not the house band, certainly some regulars in the early days there. And Kirk was drawn to the blues recordings that began circulating. According to historian Charles Wolfe, Kirk McGee learned Salt Lake City blues directly from Jackson's recording. Now, so here's some just interesting stuff about the instrument. So you all probably are well aware that there's not many people who became famous playing or even played much of a banjo guitar. St. Cyr with the Hot Five was one of them. Charlie Jackson. Johnny St. Cyr first recorded with Louis Armstrong in 1925. He and Jackson were both from St. Louis. St. Cyr built his own six-string neck and put on a four-string pot on recommendation basically from the band leader that he'd be able to make his instrument a little bit louder. And then according to St. Cyr interview, he went to Chicago in September of 23. Jackson started recording in 24. I don't think anybody yet has done any serious research to find out about the connection of that instrument between those two people. It's hard to believe it didn't exist. I have not yet been able to find anything. Sam McGee recorded Salt Lake City Blues not too long after that, doing kind of a version that's clearly influenced, although much more country. Maybe that's the connection to the country of this session heading here for this talk. So there are certainly some other places that we might talk about Jackson's influence. So very interestingly, recently, I started this project in June. I was then connected not long after that through Garriott Document with Randy Meadows, who discovered Jackson's grave only about 3 months prior, an unmarked grave in Lincoln Cemetery in Chicago. There's a roots nonprofit group called Killer Blues that exists basically to make headstones for unmarked blues player's grave. They have since made one. And in August, on August 18th, I don't know if any of you in the Chicago area, we will be doing a Papa Charlie Jackson celebration. So there'll be a ceremony at the gravesite to place a headstone. And then some of the folks from my recording, along with a couple of other people, are going to be coming in and doing a show at the Buddy Guy Legends Club that night. So that's really exciting to hopefully get some visibility for Papa Charlie here. So let me just finish with two things. One is, if any of you happen to be in the areas, we're going to do a house concert on Sunday outside of town here, and then on our way up to Chicago in Charlottesville in Ohio, and then ending up in Chicago on the 18th. The dates are there. There are a stack there and in the back. Just a little flyer about the project, my contact information, the dates of the shows that we currently know that we're going to be doing. We all have busy lives and have a hard time extracting ourselves to be on the road. Some of the people have, you know, full-time music gigs they got to show up for. But we're hoping that maybe over the next year or two we can do somewhere between 5 and 10 shows to bring this music to people live. If you know folks in your area or the institutions might be interested, please let me know. So I'm going to end with Jaron Paxton playing Scootalum Scoo, which is basically a somewhat silly dance tune. And the original is a fun tune, and Paxton, I think, just knocks us out of the park.
I like the Scootalum Scoo. Come on, mama, and Scootalum Scoo. Woman ought to beat.
All you got to do is dance, stay on your feet, and you can scoot along, scoot, scoot along, scoot along, scoot. I like to scoot lump scoot. Oh, I like scoot lump scoot. Oh, scoot lump scoot. Scoot lump scoot lump who? Scoot lump who? Now, when you're out in society, don't forget to tell Pomie so you can scoot lump scoot. Scoot lump scoot lump scoot. I love to scoot lump scoot. Oh, just scoot lump scoot. I like scoot lump scoot. Scoot lump scoot lump scoot. Scoot lump scoot. Now, she's a woman hard to beat. All you got to do is just stay on your feet so you can scoot lump scoot. Scoot lump scoot lump scoot.
In closing, I do want to give just one well-deserved plug to Jerry Brown at the Rubber Room Studio, who really made this record, I think, ultimately what it could be. He's a brilliant guy. And it certainly is a much better project for getting to work with him. Thank you so much.